live and on lockdown.
Are you ready?
Ready.
Broadcasting from Edinburgh, Scotland and across the globe.
Listen here.
You're listening to Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast, the host Fraser Ramsey.
Hey, this is Afia Leatham, creator of the Frame Your Day app, helping you walk out every day in victory. I'm proud to be a sponsor of Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders.
Hi, this is Zakiya Ringgold from Natural Soap by Zakiya.com, proud sponsors of the Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast.
And welcome to another edition to Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast. A bit of a spontaneous one tonight. It is a nighttime and evening. I won't tell you what day it is, just to pick an evening if you're keeping it generic. I mean, catching up with a guy, I met a guy through a group of fishing podcasters, a guy called Ira Mark Smith, but we'll talk about how he got his name Ira, but he goes by Mark. But at the very end, I kind of had a chat with him earlier to find out about his name, and I decided, oh, this is interesting, when he told me about it. So we're going to hear that interesting story, how he got that, how he got the name, but he goes by his middle name, Mark. Ira is a former wrestler, and more independent, but also a bit of, has wrestled a lot of famous wrestling names. You'll hear about during this interview, hear about his bringing up. He went through a bit of a tough time being brought up, and also his faith and how wrestling with his own demons, and how he's now got a book. But we'll probably have to do a part two with this guy, because he's got a lot of stuff to talk about. And a lot of and hopefully in the day, and what he's gone through will inspire somebody listening to this and will feel challenged in their life to overcome maybe what they're going through in a similar way, and how he has done the same through his life and how and what he's been doing. So, Mark Smith, where welcome to the Ramsey Unleashed, the Going Beyond Borders podcast. How are you doing?
That was such a great video that. Where it was coming on, Ramsey.
The intro.
Yeah, the intro. I mean, I am so intimidated. That was better than, I mean, that was as good as WCW. That was fantastic. I was just waiting for Tony Schiavone to say something or Jim Ross to go, what a slobber knocker. So anyway, it was fantastic.
Well, let's just dive in. Let's talk about. Let's talk about the funny story. How did you got Ira? Let's talk about how you got your name. Let's do that.
Well, I mean, like most people, you're named it someone. Unfortunately, fortunately, whichever way you want to say it, the man I was married. My God, I've been married to Brenda for 31 years. Oh my, boy, this is spontaneous. You can tell. CTE, I'm already claiming it. Anyway, so the doctor that delivered me, that said, hut one, hut two, hut, hut, hut. And then I came out, you know, like an athlete would. And so his name was Ira Slay. But he didn't like Ira. His nickname was Dutch. And he was a cool-looking guy, a great doctor, great heart. He became a minister later on. But I was named for a man that didn't even like the name himself. So, but I say it this way. My parents got divorced after 30 years. My mom was a great stabilizer. She gave me a normal childhood in many ways. My dad, we'll get into it, abusive, all this kind of stuff. They probably didn't talk much about the name. They probably looked at Dutch Slade as I came out of the womb and they probably said, Dutch, what's a good name? And as a joke, he probably said, you can call him Ira. They said, okay, done deal. That's probably what happened.
So you've got a name named after the doctor who delivered you.
Basically. He wouldn't even use the name. That's right.
But you go by Mark Smith. So where did the Mark part come from?
I had an Uncle Mark.
Right.
I do not ever remember having a grandfather, okay? I was the youngest of five. I really don't remember many uncles, maybe one or two. I have a brief memory of sitting in Uncle Mark's lap one time, and I had to be a little runt at that point. I mean, little. But I do remember something about, I know the fact he was good to me. And so that's where Mark came from.
Cool. Let's dive into a little bit of your life. Now, obviously, we've been, once you said your mum brought you up as best she can, but you also said that you, what, I mean, during the sort of, in life, we all go, the first, you get your, up to your age of five, and you're roughly five, six, you started going to school, and you start the usual stuff. I mean, what was life in general up until your sort of maybe early teens, like, education-wise? I mean, obviously, with,
yeah,
how, where did all this sort of, the was it all right? And then the abuse, you're telling about your dad, it was a bit abusive to you. Where did that sort of kick in?
Yeah, I really don't remember them not fighting.
Right.
As a kid, it was always, I used to have a little name for it called the 11 o'clock, 11 p.m. night at the fights, because that's generally when it was really going strong, about 11. And as I said, my mom, she was really the provider. And she and I talk every day. My dad passed of cancer. Mm-hmm. And I actually, my brother, one of my brothers and I actually buried him with a shovel. Now, burying your own father.
Mm.
There's a lot of things about my dad I didn't like. Till today, there's a lot of things about my dad I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
He was a racist. He had a lot of prejudice toward people that were different. I used to hear him say things that I really have never said myself. But getting back real quick, I don't remember how many, but there were several pictures on the walls where if you lifted up the picture, there'd be a handprint of the of his one of his hands going through the paneling.
Go ahead.
And so I do remember as I was getting older, I began sleeping with a baseball bat in my bed. It was a silver, grayish softball bat. It was a Louisville Slugger. Had a black handle. I still remember that bat. And I was actually talking to my mom about three, four nights ago. And she said, "Mark, you hid that bat well." I said, "Really?" She said, "Yeah." She said, "I'd forgotten all about it." She said, "What would you have really done with that bat?" I said, "Mom, I'd have killed him." I would have.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, one of the few memories as a child with my dad is he gave me a cigarette. No kidding. And that kind of seems very strange in today's society, but that's one of the things I remember. But it's very It's a very uncertain life when you've got a parent coming home. You don't know what's in store next, because anything that happened bad at the gas station is probably going to set him off at home. And I found out later, he was beaten with chains as a child.
Right. So it's a kind of common theme.
Yes, yes. And I can say luckily, well, I won't say luckily, it's got to be more of God himself, but I'm just so glad that my kids have not had to live in that. They've not had to live in that kind of fear.
Mm-hmm. So what were your folks generally arguing about? What kind of was the tipping point of what were, when you're giving all that stuff?
My dad was a womanizer.
Right.
He owned a business in the same respect with the customers. He would have a great heart and he would just let them take advantage of it. Maybe that's why he was like a bully at home. He in some way had revenge, that feeling. I don't know. But we were definitely, we kids and my mom were definitely an outlet for his frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And But the womanizing and money and spending, things like that. And I know the womanizing is absolutely for real. He told me, and you know, he died and never knew. He told
me. Okay.
He had had a hernia surgery.
Right.
And he had a pillow over his midsection. And he was high as a kite one day. I went by to see him. He was high as a kite. And we began just talking. And he started telling me where he would meet the women. And he was laughing and telling me everything. And it was very strange to me because I didn't know whether to rip his head off or just let him continue to incriminate himself. But I just sat there and let him incriminate himself. I never went and told people what he had done, what he told that day. But it's very strange, Frazier, when your dad actually confesses his womanizing to you. Very strange.
So when did he die? How old were you when he so passed?
Okay, when he passed away, we were living in Texas. There was somewhat of a a coming reunion between us. My dad, I don't know how else to say it, so if it's okay with you, he was a BS artist. He really was. He could trauma. He could sell ice to a Eskimo. Okay.
As the saying goes.
He could. But I just got to the point where when I'd had kids and Brenda and I had been married a while,
right.
I got tired of him carrying on junk all the time on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to be this charming guy. And I finally told him, I said, look, when I ask you how you're doing, I mean it. I want to know how you're doing. If all you're going to do is joke instead of having a relationship, then I think it's best for my kids for us just to stay away from it.
Go. So how old were you roughly when he passed?
Let's see, I'm 50. I was born in 66. My birthday's December 4th. So I'm either 56 or 57. My math's not computing right now. Anyway, I think I'm 56. But I would have been probably, I'm going to guess, 40-ish.
So 40s, not too long. Okay, not too bad. Long ago.
Yeah.
Got you. So let's go. During your sort of teenage years, what got you, I guess at school, what got you into, when did you start like wrestling or what, what were your teenage years
right,
like?
Right.
Were you a good kid? Were you kind of out causing trouble? What were you, what kind of guy were you when you're maybe leading your teens leading up before you came with someone adult?
Yeah. My senior year in high school, I remember I was taking a typing class. I fell over on the keyboard because I was drunk in class. And I spelled something like Rubishlubin or something like that, you know, something weird. And when the teacher asked me, she came and she actually grabbed me by the hair, but in easy. She didn't rip or nothing, but she grabbed me by the hair and lifted me up. And she said, Mark, what is this? I said, it's a foreign language. She said, son, just go back to sleep. And just she laid my head back on the keyboard. I think by the time I was in high school, everything at home, all the stuff that had happened, I was frustrated. I really was. I had to have an outlet. I didn't handle things well. I was always, if I ever fought anybody, I was defending someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea when I hit people. And I hit a few, but all I know is I would be mad. I would hit them one time and they'd go down on the ground. It was later that my friends would tell me when I would hit somebody, you know, they would elevate off the ground a little bit. They would go back. And so I thought, that's kind of a neat skill. I did some training after school or after work. At a local boys club, boxing, that kind of thing. But I was able to develop some hand speed. And so in high school, if I saw someone making fun of someone else or trying to hurt someone else, I would step in, pop, pop, they'd go down. If I wanted to play with them a little bit, I would just jab them for 5 or 10 minutes. One of the coaches pulled me off to the side. He said, "Mark, number one, I'm glad you took care of this guy. But if you ever use those skills again here at school and beat somebody like you beat him," because I probably hit him with about 15, 20 jabs before I just right crossed him and knocked him out. He said, I'm going to have to pop you in front of everybody, because I can't make it look like that's acceptable."
Oh, yeah.
I said, "Yes, sir, coach." So I always respect that. But I didn't handle high school well. I did enough to get by. A lot of drinking. Never really much drugs. About the most drugs I did was actually in the wrestling business. I could see how Coke would mess with people. So I was more with the weed, that kind of thing. Weed and beer, or weed and mixed drinks. That was kind of my go-to. That's how I dealt with pain.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of strange. In wrestling, I did that to deal with physical pain. In high school, I did that to deal with emotional
pain. Right.
So, I've never thought about that till right now. You're a good therapist. How much do you charge per hour? You're really good, dude.
Well, yeah.
You're gonna have me crying by the time this is over. Thanks, and I'm an ugly crier. In fact, I'm ugly anyway, but anyway, yeah, no. That's why I don't have a ring light on me, Fraser. See, you've got the look, got the sleek. I don't have a ring light because my wife tells me I look better in the dark.
you got a face for radio then. Okay, we'll get. So, this is brilliant. This is it.
Now, Fraser, I've got a question for you. Okay, I've never asked you this, and I don't know if anybody ever has. This is a for real question.
Right, okay.
I think it's very neat. You know, me writing the book and being on your program, and we're having a great time together, and all this, and I'm hoping that through what we're talking about, plus the book, someone can be helped.
Yeah.
That's going through something really bad or whatever the case may be. And it may be the exact same motive for you, but I'm really curious. You're really good at this. What got you into wanting to podcast?
Oh, crikey. Right. Okay. It was actually, well, you're talking about the end of 2014. I was talking about, actually, it was wrestling related, to be honest with you, because I kind of started listening to Chris Jericho's podcast, Talk Is Jericho.
Oh, God. Okay.
So I kind of started getting, wanted to find out a bit more. And I got my friend Hugh, and we started the original book before. So then we started doing the podcast side. So that's what we did. So that's how I got into it. I started listening to that. That was way back in 2014. So you literally didn't need 10 years. Like, it could be 10 years. Almost. It's 9 years now.
Yeah.
That's what got me into it. Yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll give it a bash and see where it goes. And then, yeah, 9 years later, you know.
Right. Was it like when you did it, it just really tickled that place or
no, I think it just
or something.
I just sort of try it. I think to see where it goes. And it started off with the both of us, and it kind of just yeah, it's more just like what Ron is talking about, kind of general politics and stuff like that. And it was a little bit un-PC, but it was a little bit kind of, yeah. So, but eventually just as time went by, you know, I started to end up, because he was married with kids, and I was just interviewing a lot of people anyway. So eventually it was just time to call, sort of go separate ways. And I just kind of kept interviewing people, and I rebranded it slightly, and that was it, you know. So I just like it, having a good old chinwag and hearing good old inspirational stories, you know.
Yeah, you like getting in my business. He gonna make you cry. Okay, I got you. No, I'm kidding with you. You know, to give the audience, I told the real deal on this, the real scoop. When we talked for a few minutes before this, and mm-hmm. I mentioned that there would probably be a question or two I'd want to ask you, okay. And that was actually one of them.
Okay.
So people out in the podcast land, TV land, all kind of land, look, I wanted to find that out. I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry for it.
Let's go back to where we are. So obviously you're doing a bit of drugs and things in your early school days, stroke. So let's go expand on that a little bit.
Okay. Well, I graduated school, high school, and I decide, okay, I'm going to go to college. Or mm-hmm. I'm told, you know, my best impersonation of my mom, you're going to go to college, young man. Okay, I'm going to go to college. So I went to college. And I still was not over that phase. Let's see. What did I do? There you are. I'm sorry. I bumped my mouse by accident. I got confused on the courses. I thought biology was beerology.
Okay.
And I thought John Adams was Jack Daniels. And so I got confused on this. So I was very impressive. They said nobody had hardly ever done it before. I didn't graduate. Oh my gosh. I ended the year with a 1.11 grade point average. That means I was the lowest D you could get. A 1.0 was a D. I was only a couple percentage points from having an F after a whole year of college. So they called me into the dean's office, and I also get a letter handed to me that says I'm on probation and I have to withdraw. So I do, and work at a gas station, and a fellow I went to school with came in, and his daddy was back in the WWF with Chief J. Strongbow. Mm-hmm. His name, Chief J. Strongbow's real name was Joe Scarpa.
Mm-hmm.
His son's name was Mark. So it was Mark Scarpa, Mark Smith. Whenever they sat us in class and we were alphabetized, we sat beside each other. Well, we got along really good. And he saw me pick up some metal and some different equipment. And he said, man, what? Why don't you come out with me and let me show you what I'm doing? I says, what do you mean, Mark? He said, I'm home now visiting daddy, but I've been up in Oregon working for Don. I think it was Don Owens. Yeah, the last name was Owens.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran that Northwest wrestling promotion, the Northwest mm-hmm. Territory. And he said, come out. I said, Mark, you're wrestling full time? He said, yeah, I'm making pretty good money. And he was making decent money up there. He was making around, I want to say, about between $800-$900 a week. Okay. And just driving a couple hours. He wasn't having to drive too far. So he was able to make a little money being single. And I go, okay, well, look, when I get off, you want to swing by and we go out to wherever you're talking about? I had no idea. Well, he had this wrestling ring, 18 by 18 wrestling ring, sitting out in the woods in a little cleared area. So he said, okay. He said, do you know how to body slam somebody? I said, well, I've seen it on TV. I said, here and here. He said, yeah, body slam me. And he goes, Mark, You didn't even let me plant and go up with you. You just jerked me up. And he said, and he used some good words, pretty fancy words, a lot of them four letters. But he was saying, you're strong. Oh, my gosh. And I had a 38-inch waist and a 54-inch chest and a 21-inch neck. So he said, can you flip? And I got in there and I did the stuff and all this. He said, here, I want to work with you a little bit. So I worked with him a little bit. And then he and someone else I knew took me to a guy that owned a used car lot who was retired. He used to be one of the managers of the Mastomatics.
Mm-hmm.
He calls a guy named Art Pritz. Art Pritz meets me at a rec center. Mm-hmm. A 1-inch collegiate wrestling match. You know how hard those mats are on a basketball court. That's mm-hmm. all I trained on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had things shook loose in me. It was crazy. It was. I was. If you'd have put me in the oven, I'd have been shaking bait. I tell you what. But anyhow, I go and I start working some small shows. One of the former Mastomatics comes out of retirement. And my first match was against a fella from Columbus, Georgia, who's really a legend in the Southeast United States. His name's Jerry Oates. Jerry Oates. He has a brother named Ted. But I wrestled Jerry. And then I got calls and worked some house shows, some small shows for the AWA that were being run by Jerry the Crusher Blackwell.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was just off doing small shows, wearing my hood, my mask. We call them a hood. And sometimes I would work twice in a night, one with the hood, one without. I'd have two sets of gear. Well, how I ended up getting in the NWA was one of the original assassins,
mm-hmm.
Jody Hamilton. I called Jody Hamilton and I said, Mr. Joe. He said, and he had this deep voice, yeah, Mark, what do you need? I said, Mr. Joe, I'm going broke doing this wrestling thing. And I said, you know that ring I bought? And I spent $1,000 and bought a 16x16 ring. When I say 16 foot by 16 foot.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I know the ring you're talking about. He said, I've wrestled Andre the Giant in that ring. I said, cool. I said, well, Mr. Jody, I just want to sell it. I'm broke. I'm desperate. He said, Mark, I'll make a deal with you. You bring that ring, or I'll come down and we'll get the ring together, bring it up here and set it up. I'll take care of all the maintenance, and something big is about to happen. And since I've known you and seen how you were, you're going to be a part of it. And, I mean, Fraser, I'm so broke. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds good, but to me, it was just so disappointing. I needed cash.
Mm-hmm.
He calls me about 3 weeks later. He says, Mark, can you be in Cleveland tonight? And I said, well, yes, sir. Cleveland, Georgia. And I knew he had run shows in Cleveland, Georgia. I go, mm-hmm. yes, sir, Mr. Joe, I can be up there. I'll leave here about 3, be there by about 5. Is that okay? What time's the bell? He says, Mark, I'm not talking about Cleveland, Georgia. I said, well, what you talking about, Mr. Joe? He says, I need you to come by CN Center and sign your contract to pick your plane tickets. You're going to be in Cleveland, Ohio tonight. And, you know, I'm very composed. I think I'd do something like this. You know, I'm holding my phone. Mm-hmm. Back then, it was a regular-looking phone, right? But there were no cell phones. And I try to keep my composure. So naturally, he tells me that, and I go, ah! And I'm freaking out. So I get my pack up all my gear, run up to the airport or CNN, go to the airport, fly out, get there, walk in. Sid Vicious over here.
Wow.
Over there, Ron Simmons, Hacksaw Butch Reed, the Freebirds over here, the Midnight Express over here. I mean, I thought before I walked and got started getting dressed, I was going to need to put me a Depends on because I was scared to death.
So basically, you're hanging with the legends of wrestling nowadays. Names are kind of some of the names you said I don't know, but I know some of them I have. Yeah.
So well, Mike Rotunda, Bray Wyatt's dad was in there.
Mike
Rotunda, Sullivan, Dr. Death, Steve Williams. Manager, Playboy Gary Hart, the great Muta was in there. Sting, Luger.
Sting, wow. Sting.
Yeah. Man. Lex Luger, Flair was there. And so we get dressed, we look at the match sheet, see what's going to happen. And so naturally what we do is we start running through the building, just opening every door we could find. Just to see what's in there. And we actually open a door, walk, and this building evidently has a real big wall.
Mm-hmm.
And we go through the door and through this wall, and we're on a stage, and Alice Cooper's crew was setting, because Alice Cooper's having a concert the following night. And I'm thinking, I have just, you know, I feel like I'm in the Wizard of Oz or something. Right? I mean, I'm just freaking out. And that's actually how I got into the wrestling business. I had bought a ring, doing small shows, and then Jody Hamilton, he calls me, says, I want you in Cleveland. From there, it was just building relationships. You know, it seemed like every night I was working on the road, Terry Funk would walk in, hey, brother. And just start dressing right beside me in the chair next to me. Terry Funk.
Nikita Koloff.
Ivan Koloff. The Road Warriors.
Road Warriors, wow.
Oh, they love hot dogs, come to find out. Hawk would always want hot dogs before they wrestled. So we would be standing and watching out of a black curtain, just watching. Probably no more than through a little peephole like that, make through the curtains and see them what's happening in that match. And Hawk would go, "Hey, you want a dog?" Well, if Road Warrior Hawk asks you if you want a dog, you don't tell him no. You say, "Yes, sir, Mr. Hawk. Yes." Sir. So, I mean. I'd have went and killed a dog and made him a hot dog if he needed one.
So, what was your kind of characters in the wrestling? Obviously, you've just signed, and you've kind of what was your kind of characters? Obviously, wrestling is a character, a bit of a character. So, what was your sort of persona for wrestling when you're doing it?
Okay, and
when you're sort of heel face, so obviously heel's a bad guy. For those who do the wrestling, face is good guy. So, what were your kind of? What was your kind of looking back at some of your early matches?
They brought me in as a clean cut guy.
Clean cut, okay.
And so I was running as a face quite a bit, and I would be going against Rotunda, well, the Varsity Club, the Steiners, all them Varsity Club, Road Warriors, because even though people would cheer for them, they were considered still heels. Gill of the Butcher, the Iron Sheik. Hot Stuff. I forgot. I work at Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. I always forget about him. I only worked him one time. But Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. He was married to me. I think married or boyfriend girlfriend with Missy Hyatt at that time. And the Russian assassins. One of them was a fella, blonde hair. His name was Jack Victory. He did a lot out for the Von Erichs out in Texas. And then, of course, I ran like that a few months, and then they turned me into a heel, and that's when I would wrestle like Flying Brian Pillman. Let's see. Gosh. I'm just kidding. I wrestled Sid, let's say, as a baby face. I used to work at Sid Vicious a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Sid Vicious and Danny Spivey. As a heel, I worked against Ron Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Because he and Butch Reed were Doom or something like that. Teddy Long was their manager. And then they separated. And, gosh, I worked against a guy named Nick Busick, who ended up going to WWF. Oh, and as a heel, I worked Ricky Steamboat.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was a lot of fun. Scott Hall was a lot of fun.
Cool.
Tommy Rich was a lot of fun. So during
that time, obviously with your early struggles with sort of dabbling in the hatch and weed and all that, or weed, yeah, and drink, how did that sort of fade out and you got the concentrated orders that kind of obviously seeing in the industry back then, I'm guessing, and probably there's a lot of alcohol or drugs or especially steroids going around. I mean, how did it affect you and how that's probably just a touch on the surface, you know?
Yeah, well, when I finally walked away from the wrestling business, I could have been facing 20 years in prison.
Right.
I don't tell everybody that. Yeah. Richard Cantrell, Sheriff Richard Cantrell, he's passed away now, of Spalding County, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
The Georgia Bureau of Investigation had me on tape buying steroids.
Right.
When I walked away from the wrestling business, I knew I'd be away forever. That killed me.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it would just kill. You're asking how did it affect me?
Yeah. Or obviously you're around it every day, because a lot, I suppose back in the day you used a lot more steroids more than you'd probably sports. I mean, yeah, it was.
Yeah, there were no wellness programs. Let's say
exactly. It wasn't like, like you're broccoli and cucumber.
You know, yeah, and you knew. I mean, you knew in the dressing room who was doing it, who wasn't. Mm-hmm. You also knew who you could buy it from. You knew who were the most expensive ones to buy it from, who were the cheapest, who had the better quality. I mean, for me, there was some DECA and some D-ball testosterone test. And I almost started dabbling into horse hormones because some of the wrestlers were working on horse hormones.
Horse hormones.
Yeah.
So,
no joke.
I'm trying to get my head right now about horse hormones.
I'll tell you what, I would make a joke. But I want you to take me serious.
I'm trying to take you serious. Horse hormones. That's the most random.
The only
what does horse hormones do to you? The normal hormones, I'm going to ask.
Grow like crazy. I know what you're thinking. Don't go there.
I'm going to have to.
Okay.
Brief. So you.
The only thing bad about the horse hormone is after about your third cycle of it that you've done, every time you see some hay, you want to go get you a bite of it. And you want grain and wheat, not barley and all that.
I have to say, that is the most random, crikey. Wow. Horse hormones, because they make you bulk up more than normal.
Right, exactly. And
I can't mean.
But the thing too, Fraser, though, I mean, you say on this session we're about to run out of time.
Well, it's all good. There's no time. I'm enjoying this.
Okay.
There's no rush.
Well, yeah. The thing is really, when you think of all these things, you go, no sane person would do it. That's what you would normally think. The normal person on the street, I guess, would think. What do you think?
Yeah, true. Yeah, nobody would.
But see, that's how much it means to succeed. Do you sell your soul to the devil?
No.
You know, I can't say I sold my soul to the devil. I can say that I compromised myself. I compromised a lot of people that I love. And I was married then, and not to Brenda, but to another young lady. And she at times was my valet in smaller shows she would go out with. And I got to where I was treating her like dirt. I wasn't beating her and that kind of stuff. Nothing like that. But just not treating with the respect that you should.
Oh, yeah.
The wrestling business is a very cutthroat business.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, to get on top, that means you got to knock somebody down.
Yeah.
And you know, when it comes to home versus wrestling, it's almost the same way, because there are times where you have to knock those down at home. And I mean it that figuratively, but not knock down the home so that the wrestling stays is the most important thing.
Go ahead.
I was very pro-abortion. I was pro anything as long as it kept me my career and that it would not get in the way of me getting on that airplane and going to the next town. And so I was willing to sacrifice everything. I mean, think of, and God bless him, but, you know, and he jokes about it, so I think I can say it. You know, Flair's marriages, you know, and he's been able to, and then the Price of Fame, the one on DiBiase, and his regaining relationships with family. We don't realize wrestling takes the toll on us that it does while we're doing it. But when it seems like when we step back and we look around us, we realize the world is a lot different than it was when we started it. And the problem is what we did.
Mm-hmm.
The people out there still love us, our family. We're the one that betrayed them in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in my book, I mean, really, if you want to say, who is the villain? In my book, it's me.
Good. Let's okay. Before we go, let's say they said how many years were you wrestling for on a period?
Okay, I wrestled four and a half, something like that, and then years later, I stepped back in. In small stuff to help train. Right. And had a few matches that way. Now, since then, I've had both hips replaced, knee replaced, and I think I'm going to get back in for a farewell for one or two now. Okay. But I've already taken some bumps in the ring, and I know all my artificial joints can take it.
That's all right. You told me a story a while ago when we were having a call once, and you talked about you were wrestling Sid Vicious, and you talked about that he'd been in the gym, he'd taken some bad steroids or something.
Oh, whatever. You know, they all got bad juice at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I've always said this, Sid, number one, I love Sid death. So, I'm not meaning this derogatory. There was no health wellness program. I mean, the business, so cutthroat, so political. Sid did what he had to do, just like every other big wrestler. And I'm going to tell you, If I had Sid's height, I would have done the exact same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Just below, right, just below 6 foot, I'm like, even with Flair, when Flair was wrestling in the 80s. Okay. Oh, yeah. Flair's not a tall guy. Mm-hmm. Neither is Steamboat.
Oh, yeah.
But Sid's a monster. And I don't know why, but it almost seemed like people, when they worked Sid, little guys, they would try to get stuff over on him or whatever. And I'm going to tell you, I think one night I was like in West Virginia and Huntington and Charleston. And what they should have done was taken one of those numbers like they have on the back of airplanes, you know, the call, like the plane number or whatever. Yeah. They should have painted it on my rear end because I think he threw me from Charleston and I landed in Huntington. About, I mean, that man could launch me like, I mean, I'm telling you. So that man could throw me so far, I'd have to wear a seatbelt just so I'd feel safe. That's how far he could throw me. Anyway.
Are you able to tell the story about because you're wrestling him, they had to ask you to do certain things?
Yeah, he was hurt bad, bless his heart. And mm-hmm. And he was coming up for the belt. You don't, if you want to be a good company man,
mm-hmm.
you don't try to take advantage of hurt nobody. And mm-hmm. I mean hurt him. Of course, Sid could have killed him, but I mean as far as you know, emotionally or job wise, you don't want to hurt nobody. I did. Now, there's a lot of people out there that would. I would. And Sid, we had a great match. He did the things he wanted to do. And Sid's one of those guys, he's so big, it's best to work with him than try to work against him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, you know, a guy's almost 7 foot tall and built like, I mean, the Incredible Hulk.
very huge.
Yes, yeah. Huge. What are you going to do? So, I mean, so I wanted to work with him. And I got to tell you, this is when I found out that Sid was such a good guy. Was if I was going to wrestle against somebody in for the first time, and normally a big guy, if Sid saw it, he would look at the guy, he would walk right up to us and go, "You take care of him." Yeah, I'm going to get hurt some, sure. But you don't have to try to break my arm or break my leg or break my neck. And that's really what he was telling the guy. Or he would tell the guys. And I thanked him so much. And if I saw him today, I'd want to tell him thank you. He's a funny guy. And from what I've heard, a tremendous softball player.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the world of Sid. I really do.
Mm.
Sid Beauty, you know, real name. And but I can't say nothing bad about him. Look, so when a man like that takes care of you so that you know you can work and make money the next night, how do you fault a guy like that?
Yeah. No, it's a tough one. I suppose it's difficult in the industry at the time of year. Time that the era was obviously, yeah, you had to keep going, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what was
nobody wanted their reputation or to start jobbing for other guys because they wanted to be able to compare and have a choice between Atlanta or Turner and Vince.
Aye, Vince McMahon.
And so if you were working for one of those promotions and you were a big star and then you just start losing all the time, look, the other company can't take you. And exactly. You just all of a sudden, you're at the top of the heap. Because people are going to look at it and go, the guy lost over there. He's winning all the time over here. So we've got one weak organization and one strong organization. I'm not going to watch the weak organization.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's go back into you, but when did you really find you had a faith? Well, when did you start just trying to discover your faith?
I gotta use a caveat with this, and that is I'm not trying to insinuate anything. I'm just stating the fact, and it is in no way meant to hurt anybody. Okay. So I want to say that I was married. I'm not mentioning names because I'm very careful about using people's names. Okay.
Okay.
But I'd been married for 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
I walked in coming off a trip. I believe I was coming off a trip and I heard this very strange noise, that a really strange laugh. And so I went down to I think we had a condo or an apartment or something. Anyway, went in the bedroom. She's laying on her stomach and there's this noise, this, whatever this noise is, it's kind of like her laugh, but it's different. And I kept asking, baby, are you okay? Are you okay? And like I said, I have been mean to her. She doesn't deserve anybody to look at her in a negative way. All right? Mm-hmm. I'm the villain. Turned her over. And Fraser, I don't know what happened. Something surprised me. Something hit me so hard that I was pushed back and I landed on my back on the floor. I went, got in the car. I was scared, just plumb scared to death. Drove around the area for a few minutes, came back home. She's so composed. Everything seems fine. And she just looks at me with a straight face and says, I'm done. I'm leaving. Now, I couldn't blame her for that because of the scumbag I'd been, or scumbag, whatever you want to say. The next day, she had already left, and I was going to just turn over the apartment to the management. And I found a pregnancy test in the trash can, a stick. Mm-hmm. I took it to my sister, and my sister said, it's positive. Well, I tried over and over to call to see what the situation was. Finally, after months, her aunt picked up the phone and said, everything's been taken care of. And that's the way she said it. That was it. Well, you know, your mind can go all different directions, but I feel like there was a child. I feel like I killed that child.
Go ahead.
And so I went to someone's house. And I just sat on the bed in a spare bedroom, didn't feel like talking to anybody, just sitting there and it's quiet. And I look and I don't know why, but I reached up and grabbed a book and I flipped it open. It was the Bible of all things. And it went to the book of Proverbs. And Proverbs is the kind of book that says, if you do this, then this will happen. If you do this, this will happen. Proverbs, I read the whole book that night and it kicked my butt for several hours. That people have asked me, what is the roughest battle I've ever been in? And I tell them, it wasn't Sid Vicious. It wasn't this person or that person. The toughest battle was the way the book of Proverbs just tore me out of the frame. And I went, Sunday came, I got in the car and just drove up the road. And I saw this church, drove past it two or three times, just turned around, driving past it. Finally, I stopped, went inside, sat down. I got so sick at my stomach sitting there, I had to run outside and throw up on the front lawn. Came back in, had to go back out, throw up on the front lawn again. Third time, I walked in, I was watching my clock, my watch, and about 30 seconds or so before service started. I walk in there. I clamp my hand against the side of the pew. They started singing a song. The name of the song was called Lift Jesus Higher. It was a chorus. I remember that. I don't remember them finishing the song because they said I had got up, almost ran to the altar. I just went down to my knees. It literally felt like somebody took a water hose and my navel, my belly button, connected it, and everything got flushed out. That was at 10:30, 10:40 in the morning. Somebody taps me on the shoulder. I looked up, and as a real young kid, it was my next door neighbor. He was a pastor. That was his church. I didn't know that was his church.
Oh.
So I said, Mr. Lewis? He said, hey, Mark. He said, I was surprised to see you coming down the altar. I said, where's everybody? He says, oh, they've been gone a while. What time? Well, what time is it, Pastor Lewis? It's 1:30 in the afternoon. Let me go buy you lunch. And then I started walking into the church door. Then Brenda, I meet this late girl, Brenda. She and I are sitting in a service out in a tent. And it's about 6 months, 7 months later. And I say, God, you know, I'm wondering, you know, if I'm going to get married again, but if I don't need to, that's all right. Just if you would tell me something, let me know something. Well, this woman that was behind us, crazy, I ain't lying. You know, you've seen people, women, their hair is white, then it gets that little bluish tint to it. This woman was so old, her hair looked like a Smurf. All right. I swear she went to the prom with Abraham Lincoln in the 1840s or 1830s.
Yeah, the blue ribbons.
Yeah. She might have been drafted into the War of 1812. I'm not sure. She said, I have a word for you. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, what you prayed for, the answer is right beside you. And that was Brenda.
Oh.
And we've been married 31 years.
31 years. Wow.
And for my dad to be a racist the way he was,
mm-hmm,
and to use all the names he used to use for people of different color.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said that earlier, he did things that really bothered me. That was one of the one thing I never thought, Fraser, was today I would have 8 kids. There, 3, 4 that are Caucasian, white.
Mm-hmm.
There's 2 that are Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
There's 1 that's Native American Indian. And then there's 1 that's African American dark skin.
Mm-hmm.
So not only did God take me, not only was I brought to a better place spiritually,
mm-hmm,
but the thing is he changed my heart in the fact that all the division that my dad would talk about and use slang names, bad names for people just because they were different. All that was taken away from me, all that prejudice, all that stuff that I didn't even know if I had it or not. But, you know, it's got to be hard not to be prejudiced when you're around such racism and things like that all the time growing up. But it's good not to have that. I mean, talk about free. I've been freed from a lot of stuff. And that is something, you know, that your viewership, those that are watching, when I left the wrestling business and then I'm divorced, I felt like junk. I felt like the statue of an old Mark Smith that was sitting in a junkyard. Not worth anything. Couldn't do anything.
Have you got the half the dog farm at the back barking away by any chance?
My kids got home from school, so the dogs were barking at the bus.
I can honestly hear the sound effects and thinking, where's that noise coming from? Is that my side or is that I can hear it from you?
Right. Oh, that's gonna be the dogs. They'll stop in just a second, I promise.
I've got to see that. I'm kind of thinking sound effects. And I was thinking, where does that barking come from?
But with me seeing all that or feeling all that.
His dogs are on heat. What are they on?
No, I actually have a dog that's blind, believe it or not.
Right, okay.
I'm going to say it. It's just a joke, please. Nobody get mad at it. It's just a joke. I put sunglasses on them and let them play "You Are the Sunshine of My Life" like Stevie Wonder. Okay. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Okay. Just kidding.
Anyway. So, let's... Dogs don't get it.
But God, the thing is, God does not make junk. Mm-hmm. And everybody out there was made just like we're made. And there is... We are not junk. And those of your viewership, they may be wondering, is my life over? No, it's not.
Mm-hmm. What? Well, just before going into more depth about your finding your faith, because you're talking, you've got, when you became a believer, you're talking about, I know your book is Fighting Your Demons. So what kind of demons during the process, in that mix?
Sure.
Let's talk about the demons in the faith, and when was this fight really... That
right.
Thing. That's obviously the nifty gritty of.
Well, I think a lot of my a lot of my inner demons were mm-hmm. the way I was brought up. Talking about my dad,
mm-hmm.
I didn't think I was worth anything.
Right.
So I had that little. I remember growing up, and I don't know. Did you ever see the Flintstones?
Yes.
When you were okay.
Yeah.
Well, you remember how the little devils would show up on Fred Flintstone's shoulder, and one would say, "Can't do this, Fred." The other one would say, "Fred, you should do this." And it was his conscience, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what the demons were like. The inner demons for me
mm-hmm.
were those gut-wrenching, traumatized feelings that when I looked at them, I was like, I don't know how I get past them.
Right.
It was one was fear of my future, fear of, am I just going to end up in a small town with no ambition? Am I going to be that guy that people look at and go, yeah, that's the guy. He had that mean dad that he didn't end up being anything. He wasn't worth anything. He was the one treated like trash. Or felt like trash. But the fear, the self-esteem, the anger. Oh my God. Think about it, Fraser. How many mm-hmm. of us have those inner demons where we're just angry and we're carrying around that anger?
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
And so you think about the anger. Then you think about the inability to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's harboring. You never just think when you're carrying around so much stuff that and you can't forgive it, you're harboring so many feelings that you cannot really experience true happiness because it's always everything you see is going to be shaded.
Mm-hmm. And so
the question is am I lovable? That was another demon, inner demon. Mm-hmm. Am I lovable? Am I able to love? Can I really have these people that have it together that I see that seem to really have it together? Can I have anything like they have?
Struggled to feel, did you not feel that you were loved much at all yourself?
No,
Or did you feel your mom?
With my dad, I felt more like a possession. Right. I knew my mom loved me. My mom allowed me to play ball. She allowed me to be in sports. There were times that my mom actually cracked my dad over the head with a chair. Because he would go at me going after one of the kids.
What about, I'm going to say, as you're at June, as you grew up, were you a lovable kind of guy, or did people love you, or were you kind of, were you kind of guy got picked on a bit or quite a lot, or were you kind of the butt of jokes?
Yeah.
Or you're a guy? Could you
The youngest of five kids, a lot of being the butt of the joke. And I enjoy being the butt of the joke now. I enjoy it. And it's because I'm happy with who I am.
Oh, yeah.
At that, when you're a kid, and if you're always the butt of the joke, you kind of wonder, well, you kind of, and sometimes you kind of believe what they say.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do appreciate my mom so much. And what I didn't know was, I was wondering, when I was young like that, and all the fighting going on in the household and all that going on, I was wondering, is that what a house is supposed to be like?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, as a kid, you have these questions. And yeah, post PTSD, when mm-hmm. When you're a kid and there's a lot of fighting. Oh, I think as a kid, you can really develop PTSD because mm-hmm. anytime you hear somebody scream, you cower. You cower mm-hmm. down. But I'll tell you this, how I fought the inner demons was, number one, just like an alcoholic. You know, they say the hardest thing for an alcoholic is to admit that they're an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Don't look, and this is what I would beg people, don't look at the inner demons as something that's unbeatable, that it's your destiny to be cursed by those kind of feelings and that trauma. But number one, admit they're there. When I was wrestling somebody, how foolish would I have looked if I'd have gotten in the ring and never acknowledge the other guy there?
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't have known where to throw my punches. I wouldn't have known how to fight, where to guard myself, how to protect myself, if I did not see my enemy. Well, the thing is God tells us he's more powerful, that we are going to win. What we got to do is, number one, we got to believe we're going to win. And number two, we've got to acknowledge that they're there, and just like wrestling, say, okay, God, I'm going to tag your hand. I need you to come in here and do it. I need you to put the finish on them. I need them to be gone. I need you to send them back to the dressing room. They'll tear me down, but you are the part of this team that nobody can beat, God. God, I need you as my part. You do that and treasure that, that's when the miracles happen.
Mm-hmm. What would you say in your life, apart from your early stages, what's really the most challenging thing that's happened in your life that's really kind of knocked you sideways completely, that's really made really just like, crikey, this is... Well, I mean, even in your life currently now, or even the early stage of Christianity or whatever, is something that's really knocked you, really been a sort of a really like a noose around, no, I would say like a weight around the neck, and you've been thrown in the river kind of thing.
Well, almost died 4 weeks ago, Fraser. I didn't tell you. Almost died 4 weeks ago.
Good grief! What, you old crikey? Wow! I think I've known you for a bit longer than that. You almost died 4 weeks ago. What happened?
Yeah, what happened was I developed a bacteria. Mm-hmm. It was my side. In fact, it was on my right side. It was breaking the bone ribs. It was swelling so bad that it was breaking the bones in my jaw, in my cheek. And it was pulling my nose toward to my right ear.
Grief.
They do not know. They still don't know what happened to it, but or why it started. But I was, they put me in the hospital, thought I was going to be in there for 2 or 3 days. No, for a day, actually. And I was in there for 5.5 days.
Good grief.
Now.
My goodness, you can see the difference. Well, you obviously, if people are watching or listening to this in a podcast, you can go to the YouTube video. If you're listening in the audio version, you can see the difference. Wow.
You certainly can see that difference.
Yeah, totally. It's wow.
So yeah.
So
and when my son Austin, this is when we were living in Texas, my son Austin started turning purple one day. And we didn't know why. I had just been told my dad had stage 4 cancer. We were talking. I was in Dallas, Texas on business. I was driving out of Dallas to go home. My wife calls me, says I'm in back of an ambulance. Get back to Dallas in a hurry. The same hospital that John F. Kennedy died in, the former U.S. president, my son was taken to that hospital. They tested his blood, and he had 0 platelets in his blood. He was bleeding to death on the inside.
In grief.
For several months. Yeah, I was mad. I hit a tree and I'd go out, take an axe, I'd hit a tree and probably yell damn it 20, 30 times. Why are you doing this? Why are you taking my son? It was not till maybe 4 or 5 months later. And they had told us that if he scratches his knee, he may bleed out before you get to the hospital.
Right.
Now, you tell me how you're going to keep a 2 to 3-year-old kid scratching his knee.
Exactly.
We one day had a message on our phone. The doctors at the Parkland Hospital Children's Medical Center there in Dallas said, Mr. and Ms. Smith, we're calling. We have new test results on Austin, my son. We do not know how to explain it, but we took his blood this morning and his platelet count was absolutely normal. The only thing we could say was it's empirical.
Wow.
You know, Fraser, I've been told 3 times, I had to count, 3 times that I was going to be hospital bound for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I was in 2nd grade, believe it or not. And they told me I had to have special braces made. Just think I ended up being a pro athlete, but I had to have braces made. My mama paid for those braces.
Mm-hmm.
They told me I would be in a wheelchair by the time I was 12, 13 years old. 12, 13 years old, I began wearing some different braces, playing ball, playing baseball. I was a pitcher. I had a 94-mile-an-hour fastball. I was attacked by a man. And when I hit him, put him down on the ground, my pitching hand was destroyed.
Right.
So, but I was told at that point that by the time I was 21, 22 years old, I'd be in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
Then living in Texas, they tell me that I was actually born with degenerative joint disease. My entire body, my joints are getting weaker.
Right.
They do not understand how I was able to play ball. They do not understand how I became a professional wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me I was months from being in a wheelchair. They told me that I was so that and that there was nothing they could do for the pain. And I'll tell you how close I was, how bad it was. Brenda went to work one day at the church,
mm-hmm.
and I was sitting on the bed, and I had my oxy and my hydrocodone all laid out on the bed in a straight line, and she had to go. She said, "Don't do it. Don't do it, Mark." And I had my drink with me, whatever it was, and she will tell you, she did not know when she came in the door that I was going to be alive, but she thought more than likely I was going to be dead. So, yeah, the inner demons, I think I've had a few battles. I mean, I don't say that being a smart aleck, being as a joke or being funny. I think I have. The thing is, that's been a long, long time ago. I hated reading and writing. Gosh, I hated it. Ended up going to college and going to graduate school, at a school called a paper mill because you had to write so much.
Go ahead.
Well, I wrote the book in 2.5 weeks. It was my actual writing time on the book. It was not finished till we adopted Jefferson. That's when the voice in me said, "It's done." And what I've been really surprised about is, mm-hmm. you know, like 227 pages or something like that. And people are saying, "Yeah, I read it 2 nights. Yeah, I read it 3 nights." The one daughter that I adopted, Native American, when she was in the foster system, she was raped. And that had tormented her. And she took one of the books without me knowing. And come to find out, she read it 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And what surprised me, what surprised me was that she read it. She said, "Dad, it helped. It helped, Dad."
Mm-hmm.
She said, "I'm at terms with everything." And so it's been something that's actually helped my own family.
Mm-hmm.
And for a guy that hated to read and write, I can't believe I did it. I feel like I look at that and I feel like it's a miracle.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a lot more we can actually talk about going forward. And I know your book. So I was going to say, I'm sure you've got more stuff you could talk about maybe in another interview. Yeah. I'm just more conscious your dog's been barking. I'm excited when you're trying to say a serious topic and you this dog just starts yapping away in the background thinking, okay.
Oh, see, I figured this. I'm taking him to the Chinese restaurant after eating.
Oh,
they think the joke's on me. The joke's about to be on them.
All I can hear is the dog barking. I hear the kids and everyone talking. I'm thinking, right, I can hear the sound of it. I can hear it all. I'm trying to miss you. You're talking the serious part. I'm thinking, oh no, kid's dog again.
Well, that's the reason I pulled it up to me. And the thing is I really do hope that.
Well, we're gonna do a part two because I think there's a lot more stuff that you can. I think we're gonna do in our section of this because there's a lot more stuff you could talk about. I think, and I believe, yeah, I think there's more gonna be more. I think there's stuff you probably just not you only just touched the surface on by looking at it. So, well, by saying with what you've said so far, I don't know how open you really want to be.
But, I think I told you one time that I'm gonna be an open book. And
right, cool.
Any question? Right.
Nice.
And I hope I haven't dodged
thing.
I haven't.
No. It's all good. I'm enjoying it. You know, there's a lot more wrestling stuff we could talk about as well. But and you've got your bullet. How? So when did you write your hello? I mean, when did you write your book? And when was it published?
Okay, it was published September 15th, No, September 13th. I'm sorry.
This year?
Yes, yes. So it hasn't been long at all. And I was serious about the writing time. The thing is, I'd had it written. I knew it wasn't ready. But I didn't know exactly what the ending was supposed to be.
Right.
And then when we adopted Jefferson and Colton, it made me realize more about the inner demons. And I realized, okay, that's what I need. And the touch on, that's what I need to get into. And I sat down in just a few hours. I wrote quite a bit about inner demons, fighting demons. And the thing is, what was I doing? I couldn't defeat the demons. It was God that defeated the demons.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was doing was wrestling with them.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So that for me, that's why the topic is so pertinent, so important, is because I could wrestle, maybe hold my own, but I could win the battle, not by myself.
So going forward, now you've written the book. That's only been recently. Going forward, obviously we're getting close to the end of a year, and you're going to be forecasting for the next again year. What kind of stuff are you looking to achieve? Any more goals? And obviously, before weeks, you've just kind of you could have died, but you obviously still got work. God's got work for you to do, and you ain't finished with you yet. So, and that means getting back in the ring again one last time for a farewell thing. You never know, but what? And your kind of general, looking for into the next year, what kind of goals or things would you like to try and achieve that you've done this time, but maybe what would you like to try and maybe achieve further and climb that ladder? You know?
Well, what I would like to do and what I'm working on is I've already got the title and the outline for this book.
Okay.
It's going to be called The Rebuild.
Brilliant.
And because we talk about the demon, defeating the demons, but when you get those inner demons, when you've won the battle, when God has helped you and the battle's been won, then how do you rebuild? How do you go from there?
Yes.
So it's going to build on like that. We've already been contacted by some churches that they want to use the book as a study guide into different lessons. So I'm going to be writing a study guide more than likely to go along with it. That if anybody wants it, they can have it. We are also starting the book. I really enjoy speaking with people. I enjoy the connecting. Like you, Fraser. I have a ball with you. I do. it's fun. And I hope to be able to go out more to groups, churches, different organizations, conferences, whatever, and be able to use whatever parts of our story will fit in, that will fit in with their message, their topic. And so we're hoping the public speaking is going to increase. We're looking at the study guide, writing that. I've already been getting thoughts together for the sequel, and the Lord, I'm gonna get back into the ring a time or two, and got a couple Comic Con shows or whatever that I'm probably going to be hitting up and doing things with. And last night, someone made a joke. They were laughing with me, and they said, "You ought to have a bobblehead doll." And I said, "Yeah, I'm a bobblehead doll all the time." They said, "No, seriously." So I actually checked in a bobblehead, believe it or not. But I want my younger kids. I want to see a lot of this come to fruition because, number one, I want my kids to see that that God's not finished with you, that you always have a purpose. Even when you don't realize what that purpose is, you just might be getting prepared for that purpose or for that task, whatever it may be. You know, you and I have talked, and you never know what our relationship may bring mm-hmm. into the future. And so, you know, I'm excited. I've got things that I want to do. I've got some things started. But we know that, I told someone the other day, God has really got a sense of humor to take someone like me and, you know, have him write a book.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm you can tell by talking to me, I'm very highly intellectual. Mm-hmm. I can even say that without laughing. I'm sorry.
So, what? Just two things. What would you say for somebody who's just recently written a book? What would you say to somebody who's maybe looking at writing a book or their story for the first time?
Well, what I would say is, number one, it's got to be more than just writing facts.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be writing an obituary. You get what I mean? Fact after fact after fact. There's got to be a meaning behind it,
yeah.
Right? I mean, look at the lessons. If you've learned lessons in your life, okay, can they help other people? Do you think other people have ran into those same walls?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll tell you, if you can't relate to an audience is probably not going to respond well to the book.
True. Yeah.
And so what I want to do was with love, with humor, you know, laughing at myself, being the butt of the joke and all this. What I want to do is let people know, hey, you can have happiness in your life, no matter what you've been through.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're being put in the grave, you've got another chapter in your life. So let the big tag team partner upstairs, mm-hmm. let him kind of lead you in that next match in your life, and you're going to find out some great things happen. And you're going to be shocked by what you do.
Exactly. So I just got, we're about to wrestling a little bit.
Yeah.
You've obviously talked about the older wrestlers you've kind of worked with and been with. What about any of the modern day wrestlers that people that you have you been around? Have you more the modern? Like you have so Sami Zayn. There's you've been around Bray White. Well, Bray White's dad, Mark Rotunda.
Sure.
You've been around, but all the who have you been around? Like the modern day wrestlers to this day, and from WWE and maybe AEW as well. For example, and other like Impact Wrestling as well.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I told you I had worked against Brian Pillman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Brian Pillman Jr., who was in Dark Side of the Ring, the two parter they had on Brian Sr. Well, mm-hmm. I got to know Brian Jr. Brian Jr. is a great kid, super mm-hmm. kid, and so talented. And he has now signed a contract. He's actually, I think, on NXT now. He goes by Alexis King or something like that, I think is what it is. And a super guy. And he was taught the right way. He was trained by Stu Hart, the mm-hmm. Hart family up in Canada. I just think the world of him. I also think Cody Hall, Scott Hall's son.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic work. Fantastic. And I got to tell you, before I knew he was Scott's son, his build is so much like Scott, even the way he stands and the way he puts his hands on the hips, all this kind of stuff. I thought, God, it looks like Scott Hall. So I went up to him and I said, who trained? He said, my dad. I said, well, okay. He said, Scott Hall. I said, D. Scott Hall. He kind of grinned. He said, no. And I'm thinking, you liar, you liar, you liar. You know you're lying. Anyway, I walked about 5 feet away from him, turn around. I walk up to him and say, okay, now that we're going to have a fresh start, I want to tell you, son, I thoroughly enjoyed working with you.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you did? I said, yeah, I did. And I said, of all things, the first time I met him, Terry Funk was working Ric Flair. Mm-hmm. And the match had gotten out of control. I and Scott Hall were supposed to go down and pull him apart. Well, I'm standing at the curtain in gorilla position with Scott. And hey, Scott? He said, yeah. Yeah. You know, that deep voice Scott Hall had. I go, exactly, what are we supposed to do? how are they expecting us to pull him apart or anything? He goes, I don't know. We're just going to go there and get the, you know what, beat out of us. Okay, that's cool. I don't know. I'm just here for the ride, man. Okay, Scott. And I was telling Cody that. He says, that sounds just like it. And I told him a few things that Scott would do when we'd be at a lounge or whatever. And he'd say, boy, that sounds like my daddy. I said, well, it ought to. It was him. And Hillman, he almost went to tears. Or his eyes watered. Let me say it that way. We talked after he had wrestled. And I looked at him. I said, you know, if I was in the ring with you, I'd feel like I was in the ring with your daddy. And he said, well, you wrestle my dad? I said, oh, yeah. When he first came up to WCW, I worked him a lot. He said, you're kidding. I said, no. I said, the way you jump up and down and get warm in gorilla position, the way you think about the match, the way you're using your arms and kind of through your mind going through the motions, he did the same thing. And then Brian started calling people, hey, come here. He used to work with my dad. Come here. And we talked for maybe 45 minutes, and we're still in contact with each other.
Brilliant.
But it's you know, it's such a blessing. It really is such a blessing. Mm-hmm. I feel so bad for Mike Rotunda and what they've had to go through.
Mm-hmm. What about, so let's, obviously there's going to be, and we need to do another interview because if we have talked for about an hour and 40 minutes almost.
Oh my gosh, okay.
Same flies, you're having fun, isn't it? It's great.
Yeah, it is. I've had a great time.
So it was great. Great. With sound effects and dogs and kids coming in from school, it's been great. It's brilliant. Chinese markets awaiting.
That's right. They're going to have funny tasting egg rolls tomorrow.
Because of this, no animals will be harmed during this broadcast. what would you, on a message of kind of positive, a message of sort of hope to people, what would you like if you want to share a positive message, right, to somebody? What would you like to share, sure, somebody out there, okay, who's listening to this and who's watched or listened on podcast or YouTube? What would you like to share?
Well, the thing is if you're on a podcast, I would just say, look, be honest and you're going to have a great time. Be honest. Don't try to embellish. About everything I tell you, you can find on the internet. So find pictures of me in the ring with the gods. And you're able to really tell the truth without anger in that if the people that have been in your lives, if you understand, they may not be people that you care for, but from everybody we come in contact with, we do learn. I mean, we do learn. From some people, we learn very positive things. From some people, we learn how not to be. So, take it for what it's worth, and that is, understand everybody that you deal with in your life, there is a positive. We either learn something good or we learn something bad, and oftentimes, if it's someone and we're learning bad from them, we can see their life and see how those bad, whether their actions or whatever they may be, we can see how it affects that person. You can almost see that's how my life's going to end up if I go down that road. Take things as learning. if somebody, you know, business-wise, I mean, screws you, remember this. You're going to be able still to look at yourself in the mirror and be happy about who you are. They can't.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you just learned how not to be. So I think it's positive when we understand that everything can be used to make us into better, more loving, understanding people. When we understand that,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a big positive. We become a better success. Does that help answer the question?
Yep. I'm just letting you talk. That's what I'm doing.
Okay. Like
your final word almost.
There you go.
I'm just letting you say your obituary. That's what I'm doing. I'm joking.
By the way, for the audience that doesn't know, I'm the one with a Scottish accent. I don't know where that guy's from. I don't know. Let me get my finger. I don't know where he's from. I'm from Scotland. Okay.
No. Those who have been, whoever's listening, whether or watched on YouTube or listened via Facebook link, LinkedIn, or listened via the audio or the podcast version, in interviewing Ira Mark Smith, it goes by Mark Smith, a former wrestler. I'm looking to get back into the ring for a wee bit of a farewell shindig. And we're looking to just to kind of talking about his book, obviously Wrestling with His Demons, talking about his just life growing up and how just school and obviously and just and what he's done. He's now facing for those. We will have his short. He will be able to. We're going to ask him actually. Where can before I carry on? Where can people Fraser, connect?
Fraser,
where can people connect with you?
I don't believe in cheap plugs, but here.
Okay, if you're watching this, you got cheap plugs. So instead of showing for those who are listening, tell people where they can connect with you. Yeah. Tell people where they can connect.
Our website is WrestlingWithDemons.
Okay.
GoDaddySites.com.
Okay.
WrestlingWithDemons.GoDaddySites.com. Now, if you go to Amazon, Wrestling with Demons by Mark Smith, you will find our book. It is red on top and kind of silverish on the bottom, and you see my family on the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
So I made sure they were real small in case the FBI is looking for them. Okay. and on the web, on Facebook, it's WrestlingWithDemons.Smith.
Those links will be in the show notes to the podcast for those who are listening on the audio version. But yeah, Mark, I just want to thank you for being. It was a very spontaneous call. You were happened to be free, and we decided a spontaneous podcast, and we just did it, and we've talked for the best part of nearly cover not just shy of 2 hours, which means we've obviously had a lot to talk about. And you've got a good in-depth story. So to those who might have got time to do it in sections, it's been great. It's been great hearing your story, great hearing the stories from wrestlers, and obviously just your life and how you've kind of put all back and be a support going forward in some way or form from across the pond, helping you, in your next chapter, next book, et cetera, et cetera.
That's right. Well, I appreciate it so much. For everybody out there, I want you to know, Fraser is the real deal. I mean, I have talked to him on and off. You will not find a better guy. And that's really important because sometimes people are really good showmen and you never see the real person. With him, you are seeing the real person. So please support him. Listen, because he is not at all trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes or anything like that. And he does this because he really cares. So please give him a shout out and let you know you appreciate him. He's a fantastic guy and he's my brother and I love him to death.
Thank you very much. Well, for those who are listening, thank you. And if you want to connect with Mark and maybe have him on your show and be interviewed or if you want to get advice in his book or get his book, hey, listen, I'm happy to connect you guys up and you can have a good old natter, chinwag on a call, and hopefully you can get some more advice or be able to collaborate in some way or form, and basically. But I highly recommend getting on your show and interviewing them again and from a different angle, different perspective. But I look forward to our second chat at some point, which will be good.
And a free dog to the first caller.
Free hot dogs. Get the dogs ready. Get the buns. You got the butter. Get the onions.
I'll even give you some kibble.
But you a mustard man, or are you more of a ketchup? Right, on that note, listen, thanks again. And to everybody who is wherever you are in the world, whether it's morning, evening, afternoon, and whatever it is, and as I say, have a great, great time, whatever you're doing each day. Keep reaching for the top. And until next time, we'll catch you on the flip side on the next show. And you take it easy. All the best. Bye for now.